Welcome to T. R. Price's Confident Conversations on Retirement. My name is Michael Davis, and I'm thrilled to be your host. I've spent my career working to help people build a durable retirement. It is such an honor to do this work, and an even greater privilege to be with the retirement experts we have with us here today. These professionals can help you feel more confident about your own retirement, whether you're planning for retirement or already there. I'm excited about this particular episode because our guests today are part of a team at T. Rowe Price that helps people understand how retirement plans like 401k plans work. I'm joined by certified financial planner professionals Jennifer Almeida and Samantha Smith. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having us today.
Thanks so much for being here. So according to some of T. Rowe Price's latest research, it seems that almost 64% of Americans have access to a workplace savings plan. Jennifer and Samantha, I know you've talked to many different types of people in your work. What are some of the more common questions that you get asked? And I'll start with you, Jennifer.
All right. Yes. Thank you, Michael. The questions really honestly run the spectrum, but most people that we talk to, I think, are just looking for validation and or guidance that what they have already done is what they should be doing, or what they're about to choose is what they should be choosing. So we get a lot of questions like, am I doing this right? What does it look like to you? Should I be doing something different in terms of how much they're contributing to their plan, or how they're investing the assets, or whether they've selected pre-tax or Roth or after-tax dollars correctly? And then the other question that I get a lot are from people who are about to retire. So questions about, does it look like I am in a position to retire now? Have I saved enough? And what happens to this account when I retire?
How about you, Samantha?
So I think that even though over 65% of Americans have a retirement plan, I don't think a lot really know its benefits or its features. And so those are very common questions that I get. What is this benefit that my employer offers for me? How do I use it? And how can I take advantage of this? Especially whenever it comes to retirement, it's something that we all think about, but not something we plan for every single day. And so having those questions answered and, like Jen said, validating their experiences is a very common experience that we get in our jobs day to day.
Wow, that's such a wide range of questions. And it's great that we have this time today to give some answers to our listeners and help them build their confidence around retirement and get the most out of their workplace savings plan. So what are the differences between an IRA or an individual retirement account and other retirement savings plans like a 401k, a 403b, a 457? Samantha, I'll start with you.
Absolutely. IRAs are individual retirement accounts, so they're sponsored by you as the individual. When it comes to the three different types of workplace retirement plans, your employer is going to sponsor them. But the big difference is the type of employer you have. For example, 401ks are going to be when you work for someone that's for profit. 457s, on the other hand, are for government employees. And then 403bs are for more nonprofit places like schools and that type of entity.
And how about you, Jennifer? Do you have any thoughts on that question?
Yeah, I did have one more thought, Michael. I just wanted to add clarity on when someone might use one versus the other. So employer plans are typically used primarily as a savings vehicle when the company is offering one, because it has higher plan limits, because they sometimes provide an employer match. So you would, of course, want to take advantage of that. Because contributions are convenient, you can make them through your payroll deduction. They take them right out of your paycheck and put them into the account. So it's kind of like setting it up to be autopilot. So it has unique advantages. IRAs would come into play typically if, for example, your employer doesn't offer a plan, or if they have a waiting period for eligibility where you can participate, but only after being employed for a certain amount of time.
Excellent. Next question. How do I know if I have access to a workplace-based retirement plan? And how do I sign up? And how do I know if I'm signed up for auto-enrollment? I've heard that term in the past. What does that mean? And I'll start with you, Jennifer.
Of course. So the way to know, really, it's disclosed usually when you receive your benefit information, when you first become an employee of a company, when you're first hired, they usually give you a package of some sort, or they direct you to a website that talks about your different benefits. Your retirement plan is one of those benefits, and typically the information for that plan is going to be outlined there. But when you first sign on with a company, there's a lot going on, and people sometimes don't get to that benefit in a timely fashion. And so that's when auto enrollment comes into place. So some companies will actually automatically defer you into a specific percentage of contribution into a specific investment if you choose to take no action. And that's disclosed to you in your documents. Again, sometimes that is missed. So you can always just double check or circle back with your benefits group to figure out if that is available as a benefit. And they're usually going to direct you to your record keeper, which would be the institution that manages that account for you, that offers the website for information, and it's going to send you your statements. And you can call their customer service line or log into their website to view your account if it is set up, or in a lot of cases, to set up the account, especially if you want to set it up before auto enrollment kicks in, or if you want to make changes. Some companies still use the good old-fashioned paper form, but that's less common now, I think. But if you ever have any questions about making changes, you should reach out to your record keeper.
How about you, Samantha?
So I think it's important to know that when you're signing up or if you're auto-enrolled, you're deferring and putting part of your salary away in these plans and saving that for retirement. So whether or not it's set up automatically upon a certain date after you're hired or you're signing up on your own, being in charge of your retirement and the amounts you're saving are still very important. It's just one of the many steps where your employer is really helping you on that road to retirement.
Very helpful. So if I'm not auto-enrolled, how much should I contribute? And then how much am I allowed to contribute? I'll start with you, Jennifer.
That is the magic question. We get that a lot. How much should I be putting in? How much should I put in to do this the right way? And there's so many ways to answer that question. So I'll start by saying that even if your plan offers auto enrollment, you should consider proactively enrolling. A lot of times the auto enrollment is set at a pretty low level that's not really going to get you to your goal. So you want to determine whether or not what they're defaulting you into is going to be appropriate for you. But besides that, I would say our rule of thumb is to defer at least enough to get your full company match. At minimum, we believe investors should be investing 6% to start and then working their way up from there to a target goal of 15%, including company contributions for the average investor. The average investor being someone who's going to retire and start collecting from their account in their mid-60s, who's going to be living off of mostly their savings and Social Security, who's looking to replace their pre-retirement income throughout their retirement that's expected to last upwards of 30 years. So there's a lot of assumptions I just went through there. As you can see, how much you should put away really depends on various assumptions that we're making, some of which may not fit what you see as your vision for retirement. So you really do need to individually assess your situation and your goals to determine if you should be saving more than 15%, or potentially if you could get away with saving less than 15% even. Of course, no one ever complains that they save too much for retirement. If you don't have any other goals, such as paying off debt or saving for college, so on and so forth, it's a good idea to save as much as you can. Always increase it if you are able to save it. I can share that at T. Rowe Price, our average deferral across our plans tends to be between 8 and 9% for participants. And I'll also throw out there that the IRS does limit how much you can put into a 401k plan each year. So in 2022, for example, you can put in $20,500 into your 401k plan. If you're 50 or older, you can do a catch-up contribution that's an additional $6,500 into the plan. This does include both pre-tax and Roth contributions, but your plan may also set some limits. So a plan, for example, could have a limit of 50% of your paycheck per paycheck being deferred into the plan, which means you could contribute anywhere from 1% to 50%, but no more than that upper limit set by the plan, until you reach that IRS limit that I just provided. If you ever do need to save beyond your plan, because obviously the limits are not going to be conducive to you meeting your goals, there are other accounts that you can save in, such as the IRA that Sam defined a little bit earlier.
So for this next question, I'm going to start with you, Samantha. How does that employer match work? And I'm sure our listeners also hear a lot about vesting. What does that term mean and why is it important?
Absolutely, Michael. So let's start with vesting. Vesting is just the access that you would have to company contributions at the time you leave employment. So you're always able to take your personal contributions you put into an employer-sponsored plan. But when an employer helps your retirement savings, that may have a time limit. Usually it's over time, you'll continue to get more access to that. And that's typically higher date to termination date. And then once you've hit that vesting, then anytime you leave after that point, you would have full access to what you put in plus your employer. Now, one of the many ways that employers can help you contribute to retirement is by that matching program. And that's where you'd see some of that vesting come into play. So matching is where your employer sets a formula, and when you save, they also save for retirement in your retirement plan. So if you put in, for example, 3% of your pay, if your employer matches dollar per dollar, they would also put in 3% towards your retirement. And it's a way for them to, one, have you save for retirement, but they also help out. One of the many benefits that your employer may offer to get you to your retirement goals a little bit easier. Jen said that 15% is the standard rule of thumb, and that match is part of that 15%. So when you put money in, your employer puts money into your retirement, it makes it that much easier to meet those goals.
Jennifer, any thoughts on that question?
Just one more thought, Michael. It is really a good idea to invest at least as much as your employer is matching. We like to call the employer match, quote unquote, free money. Think about all the accounts that you could possibly invest in, how many of them are offering to give you money if you put money into them on a consistent basis. There are very few, if any, that I can think of besides an employer plan that's offering a match. And so you should always take advantage of that to the fullest, upwards to the maximum match that they're going to give you.
Very, very helpful. So next question, what can I invest in one of these workplace plans? And how do I know what investment to pick? Jennifer, what are your thoughts on that? Those questions?
That's a great question, Michael. And I'll add that this is what participants, I think, struggle with the most. When it comes to the plan, it's pretty simple to choose a number for your deferral, and it's pretty simple to choose a beneficiary for your account. The Roth pre-tax, it's just two options there that you're choosing from. But when it comes to investments, there's a list of options, and participants a lot of time feel a little bit paralyzed by having to choose from among those options. So I'll just start by saying your plan sponsor, the company that is sponsoring this plan, they select a list of investments to make available in their plan. So that's a benefit to you because they've already narrowed it down based on their own due diligence on what they think is appropriate for their employees. So if you ever have questions about the investment options, typically you can call the customer service line and representatives are able to pull up that information and explain your options to you. They could typically help you with general ideas about asset allocation, how portfolios are mixed between the options for retirement. Some mistakes that people make, I'll just throw this out there, is copying from somebody else. So, you know, if you, for example, just try to duplicate what your boss, who might be 40 years older than you, is doing, that might be a problem. Listening to maybe what your plumber is advising you to do if they're not a financial professional. So you really want to make sure that you're reaching out to the folks who understand the options, are part of the industry, and can explain them to you. And oftentimes, there's also tools to help you elect your investments as well.
That's really, really thoughtful. How about you, Samantha? Any thoughts on that question?
Yeah. When Jen said that copying from one person to another is not always the best idea. It's because investing is not a one-size-fits-all situation. Everybody's a little bit different for how long they have until retirement, kind of their general feelings about investing, whether they get scared easily or they want to go full tilt and all in. And so it's not an easy thing to say everyone needs to be in this breakdown. A lot of times when you're automatically enrolled in a plan, your employer will set you up with one of those pre-assembled kind of age-based investments to get you started. You're usually able to make changes to that at any time as you see fit, but know that you're not completely left on your own whenever it comes to figuring out what's in the plan, how they're working, and what's available to you.
So we know a lot of listeners may have different accounts that they're saving in and not just their 401k. How can you coordinate your 401k investments with your other investments? And should you avoid duplication across those accounts? I'll start with you, Samantha.
So whenever it comes to investing specifically for retirement, it really is important to look at all of your plans across all of the places you may have them and set up a strategy or a plan for your whole retirement balance. So yes, you can have it duplicated in multiple accounts, but just making sure that you're looking at the full picture instead of just one individual account at a time can be helpful for your retirement investment goals.
Jennifer, any points you may want to add on that question?
I would also suggest considering looking at it from a household perspective if you have a partner that you are planning to retire with. So making sure that across all accounts between you and your loved one, those investments are in line with your household goals.
Great, great thoughts. So we know that modern retirement plans often have tools that may help people with their goals. Are there certain features of these plans that can really help them think through their goals more comprehensively? And Jennifer, I'll start with you.
Yes, there's a few features that come to mind. I would start with auto increase. So if you are going to start with a lower deferral amount, if you are going to be contributing a lower percentage of your pay to start up, you could consider setting up this feature so that your plan automatically increases your contribution by a certain percentage each time that you select each year. So usually you can set it up to happen, let's say, one time each year in a specific month until you hit a specific target. So just as a quick example, when I started working at my company, I was contributing 4%, but I set mine up to increase by 1% each year until I hit my 15% target. And those features are usually very flexible, so you can always go in there and increase or decrease your contribution amounts, even if you have those features set up. Another feature to consider would be auto rebalance for those that decide to set up their own specific investment portfolio. So you can set up your auto rebalance to, on a set schedule, buy and sell the underlying investments in your portfolio to readjust your mix back to your original mix that you set up. And this is important because it just makes sure that you are sticking to your plan. It makes sure that you revert back to what you intended the plan to be. And like the auto increase, you can also still make changes to your portfolio manually, or you can turn that off or adjust it at any time.
How about you, Samantha?
Yeah, whenever it comes to the tools and the resources that would come with your workplace retirement plan, it's a great start to check in with the company that holds your 401k plan or your workplace retirement plan. So many offer different types of tools like financial wellness that you can go in there. They have learning centers where you can find more information about the investments in your plan or how to invest in retirement.
So if my 401k plan offers a Roth option, should I use it? And maybe we should first define what a Roth option actually is. But Jennifer, if you can just share some perspective on that question, it'd be great.
When you hear Roth, that's one of the choices you have for the type of contribution that you're making. So when you elect to put money into the plan, it is going to go into one of various buckets depending on the type of money that it is. Some plans offer multiple options, some plans don't. So a Roth option is not a default in every plan. If it is an option in your plan, it depends on what tax benefits you prefer, whether or not you should contribute into that Roth option versus the pre-tax option or in addition to the pre-tax option. So I'll explain what I mean by tax benefit. So with the Roth, your tax benefit is typically while the money grows and on the back end when you're taking distributions from the account. While the money grows, there's no tax implication to the earnings as they accumulate. I will say that some institutions have planning calculators on their websites that you can use to help make your decision. But conventional wisdom says that if you expect your income to go down in retirement, it would make sense to make pre-tax contributions now so that you get deductions from your income while it's higher and you'll pay the taxes on those dollars later when your income is lower. And theoretically, your taxes would be lower. The opposite is true for Roth. So if you expect your income to go up or to stay the same, then you would be making Roth contributions now, not getting the deduction up front, and paying no taxes later when your income is higher and you're taking those qualified distributions.
How about you, Samantha?
A very common question that we get from the people that we talk to on a day-to-day is, which one is better? The important thing is to not let that decision put you in a state where you're afraid to start saving in your plan because you don't know which way to go. Both are going to help you save for retirement. It's more of the cherry on top to which one is ultimately going to be a greater benefit, but both have a benefit. So don't let the idea of I've got to choose between one or the other, or perhaps both, keep you from saving for retirement.
Another question that comes up quite often is whether I can take money out of my plan before retirement, either by just a direct withdrawal or taking loans against those assets. Can I do that? And I guess even the bigger question is, should I do that? And I'll start with you, Jennifer.
The answer is it depends. It depends on, first and foremost, your employment status. So typically, if you are an active employee, meaning that you are still working with the company, they can limit your access to those dollars or to certain dollars within your plan. So you'll want to, in that situation, either call the customer service line or do some research, again, usually on the website where you can find your account information, to determine whether or not for active participants there are any options to take money out of the plan. For separated participants, typically you're going to have access to your full vested account balance. At that point, the floodgates lift and there's less restrictions on access to the money, though they can still limit you to the types of distributions you take. For example, a plan could dictate whether you have to take your distributions as a lump sum versus installments, or if you can take one-off distributions, just whenever you need the money, go in and take what you need. Whether or not you should take those distributions depends on your need and your ability to pay any potential taxes and or penalties. So keep in mind that if you're taking distributions from your pre-tax money or from your Roth that's not qualified, then you would need to pay taxes on those dollars, income taxes. So you'll want to try to figure out how much tax you're going to owe and determine whether or not you can afford to pay those taxes before you take that distribution. And consider federal as well as state taxes. And generally speaking, if you're under the age of 59 and a half, with some exceptions, when you take from these accounts, there's an additional 10% penalty for an early distribution. So you'll want to be aware of that and prepare for that as well. Now, as far as loans are concerned, loans are usually available just for active participants, and that allows you to borrow from your account. So instead of taking the money out, you are borrowing the money with the intent of putting it back into the account through your payroll deductions like you make your contributions. And as long as you replenish what you took out, then there are no tax and penalty implications. But if you quote unquote default on that loan, so if at some point you do stop paying on it, the outstanding balance is treated just like a distribution. So in that case, you would have to consider taxes and or penalty. And again, here I'll say whether or not you should take the loan depends on need. Ideally, you wouldn't be touching these accounts until you actually retire and you're using it to pay your day-to-day expenses in retirement. You want to be able to replace your pre-retirement income with these dollars. But we understand that emergencies come up, and if this is the only place you can turn, then it would make sense in that case potentially to take a loan, try to opt for a shorter loan payback period, to try to opt for lower amounts, obviously only take what you absolutely need, because anything that is not in the account is not able to grow. It's not able to be invested. It's not able to compound. And so it could really stunt the growth of your account if you're constantly dipping into it for other things.
Great. Really great insights. So people that are getting closer to retirement, are there certain questions they should be asking? Samantha, I'll start with you.
When it comes to getting closer to retirement, one of the key features that you have available to you is the ability to save a little bit more. The year that you turn 50, that allows you to start saving what we call catch-up contributions. So for 2022, that's an additional $6,500 that you could be saving towards retirement each year. And so it helps you. Life happens earlier in your career. You have kids, the early spending, buying homes, and all of the other financial things that may come up. Whereas in retirement, or once you get closer, you might have the ability kind of freed up to save more. And the IRS recognizes that and actually allows you to save a little bit more. That is a little bit different for some of our plans. So if you work for a government and you have a 457 plan, there may actually be some additional catch-up. So it's called a 457 special catch-up. And that's available typically in the 3 years prior to full unreduced pensions, if that's available. So keep that in mind that as you get closer, your ability to save more for retirement may be available.
Jennifer, I'd welcome your perspectives on that question as well.
Yes, I do have a couple of items to add here. There are then questions about actually taking the money out. So a lot of folks who are close to retirement want to know what happens now. I've spent all these years, hopefully a bunch of decades, saving, putting money in. But how do I turn it into an income? And how much should I take or can I take? And to that, I would respond, how much you can take or how you can take it would depend on your plan rules, of course. You'd want to check with them to see how they allow you access to the money. In terms of how much you should take, hopefully you've used some of those planning calculators and that's something that you've determined already. But we do have a rule of thumb that we still back. It's called the 4% rule of thumb. And so in year one of retirement, if you add up all of your balances in your savings, and then you find 4% of your total balance, assuming you're retiring in that mid-60s range, that's the amount that we would suggest you don't go over in terms of your distribution in order to give you the best chance of having your account last through a 30-year retirement. And then I would also consider RMD, so required minimum distributions. Now, one thing to keep in mind when it comes to RMDs is that if you are still actively employed by your plan sponsor, you can actually push back when you start taking those RMDs until you separate from employment. When you turn 72, if you are no longer with the employer, if you are with the employer, it's age 72, or when you separate from employment, whichever is later. And so that amount has to come out. But beyond that, you're not forced to take anything else out. And even if you are forced to take an amount out, that's not forcing you to spend it. So if you don't need it, you could always reinvest it somewhere else outside of your plan. And so we get a lot of questions about taking money out of the accounts and how much you should take. You can approach it using our standard rules of thumb. But more appropriately, I would say call in and speak to somebody who can take a look at your account, what you have, who you trust to share other information with about other accounts, who can help you use the tools and calculators available for retirement income planning on your record keeper's website.
Outstanding. So this has been an absolutely terrific conversation, and hopefully our listeners believe that we delivered on our promise to answer a lot of the common questions that they had. I think it'd be great for our listeners just to summarize a few key takeaways. So Jennifer, I'll start with you. Key takeaways that you would offer for the audience.
Try to be proactive and involved with your plan. We understand it's not something really sexy. It's not what you want to do on a Saturday night, but if you engage with it, it's going to increase your chances for success. So making sure that you're setting it up and managing it with four things in mind, really, is what it boils down to. Your deferral amount, so how much you're putting in, which we gave some tips on how to go about making that decision already. What you're going to contribute into in terms of your money type, so pre-tax versus Roth, if your plan offers Roth. The investment that you're going to select, and then making sure that your beneficiaries are listed and always updated. So it's really those four things that you want to give some thought to, make a decision on, set it up. And then on a yearly basis, you want to pop your head in there and check things out, make sure that everything is still up to date and appropriate for your situation. If your situation changes, you might need to make adjustments. Remember that whatever you're not changing, you're choosing. So not making a change is making a selection, and you want to make sure that whatever is currently set up on the account is appropriate. And then a bonus would be to set up those automatic features. Anytime you can automate anything, it's going to, again, increase your chances for success.
So Jennifer, I think you said that these are not the kind of things you do on a Saturday night. I can't think of anything more enjoyable than planning for retirement on a Saturday night.
Yeah, I do.
I usually focus mine on Monday nights, and you've just had a case of the Mondays. That's when you start thinking about it.
So Samantha, what key takeaways would you offer to the audience?
I would say get started and get started early. Time is your biggest asset and your greatest friend whenever it comes to saving for retirement. Don't get too caught up in thinking you're making the wrong decision by not signing up at all or not starting to save for retirement. These things are something you can adjust over time whenever your situation changes or you just become more comfortable to make a better and more personalized decision for your retirement.
So this has just been such an enjoyable episode, and wish we had more time to answer more of these questions. But before we go, it's always helpful to leave our listeners with just a suggested next step, a parting thought that you'd want to leave with them. And Jennifer, I'll start with you.
Make sure that your present self is making the best decisions for your future self. So I have an alter ego. She's called Future Jen. And I talk about Future Jen all the time with participants because present Jen does not like to drive her little beater car, right? But future Jen is going to thank present Jen when future Jen gets to go on vacation multiple times a year and, you know, enjoy the best things in life during those golden years. So I would encourage everyone to think of their future selves, and anything that seems like a sacrifice in the here and now is really a gift to that future self.
I love that. That's a great thought. How about you, Samantha?
Know that whenever it comes to your workplace retirement plans, that this is part of your benefits package. So not something that you usually think about on a day-to-day basis when you're looking at your salary and your pay, but it really is part of those extended benefits that your employer offers to give you, one, the ability to save more than you could on your own. Two, if they're putting contributions towards your retirement. So making sure that you're just not leaving that part of your benefit on the table. And just like Jen said, it can help that future self to meet your goals much easier than it can if you're either, one, not saving at all, or saving outside and saving on your own.
So well said. I need to get a lot more familiar with future Michael. I love that thought. Jennifer. Yeah, future
I'm
Michael.
I'm sure he's a really cool guy.
Oh, no, he's very obnoxious, I tell you. So we're gonna have to work with him. But I just really appreciate you both being here. This has been such a terrific discussion. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having us.
Thanks, Michael. It's been a blast.
Great to have you here. So again, I'm Michael Davis. I want to thank you all for listening to Confident Conversations on Retirement. Be sure to listen for our next episode that continues our conversation about 401ks and retirement savings plans. We're going to discuss what options you have with a 401k plan when you change employers. If you like this podcast, please rate us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, be well, and I wish you all many confident tomorrows to come.
T. Rowe Price, retire with confidence. This episode of Confident Conversations on Retirement is provided for general and educational purposes only and is not intended to provide legal, tax, or investment advice. This podcast does not provide recommendations concerning investments, investment strategies, or account types. It is not individualized to the needs of any specific investor and not intended to suggest any particular investment action is appropriate for you, nor is it intended to serve as a primary basis for investment decision-making. The views contained herein are as of the date noted on the material and are subject to change without notice. These views may differ from those of other T. Rowe Price Group companies and/or associates. This information is not intended to reflect a current or past recommendation, investment advice of any kind, or a solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment services. The material has not been reviewed by any regulatory authority in any jurisdiction. The opinions and commentary provided do not take into account the investment objectives or financial situation of any particular investor or class of investor. Investors will need to consider their own circumstances before making an investment decision. For Roth contributions, a qualified distribution is tax-free if taken at least 5 years after the year of your first Roth contribution and you've reached age 59 and a half, become totally disabled, or died. Copyright 2022 T. Rowe Price. All rights reserved. T. Rowe Price. Invest with confidence. Retire with confidence. The Bighorn Sheep Design and Confident Conversations, collectively and or apart, are trademarks of T. Rowe Price Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. T. Rowe Price Investment Services Incorporated. Distributor. T. Rowe Price. T. Rowe Price Associates Incorporated. Investment Advisor.